The meeting to order of the TCEQ Tax Relief for Pollution Control Property Advisory Committee. And first thing on the agenda, I'll call to order. I can see those in the room, but I need to check who's on the phone. Mike Ford, heard your name. So, and just committee members. I don't want to put others on the spot if people from the public called in. So just committee members.
Bob Lloyd Graham.
Okay, Lloyd. Anybody else? All right, hearing none. My count is we have a quorum. Seven of us, okay. So if any, well, I'll announce later on, anybody that's on the committee, if they call in, they'll please announce themselves and we'll get going. All right. I'll just say the policy up front, which we do every time, and we welcome input from the public, and either by phone or here in TCEQ's office. So we expect considerable discussion today, and I don't know where that's going to go. I don't have a good read of that. So just realize that we try to use a reasonableness standard for public input. So no exact number of minutes that we limited you to, but we try to apply a reasonable standard there. So, and before we get started, any general comments from the committee?
Charles Allred.
Hey, Charles, thanks. Any comments from the committee? All right, we'll have a time for some general comments before we get into the one item on the agenda. So do we have any general comments? Okay, we got someone who will speak to us.
Please,
sure.
For the record, my name is John Kennedy with the Texas Taxpayers and Research Association. And just as background for some of you that may not be aware, when the legislation creating the pollution control exemption was passed in 1993, we were responsible for drafting it, getting it introduced, having Chairman Stiles carry it for us in the House, and as a result, and in addition to which, we organized a PAC and raised funds to support the passage of the amendment on the ballot that authorized the exemption, which it passed with a overwhelming majority. And because of that, we have continued to have, for the past 26 years, a very, lack of a better word, paternal and abiding interest in this program, and have participated along those 25 years in all of the programs that the agency has had in terms of rules as well as legislation. And as a result of that, I wanted to make a few opening comments to the committee. Some of you have heard this before. If those of you have had, please bear with me. I feel like I'm, you know, deja vu all over again. I keep repeating a lot of the same comments when I testify or speak on this matter. First of all, the purpose of this legislation was, when the federal government passed the Clean Air Act, it meant that a number of our manufacturing processing members were going to have to purchase and put on the tax roll a lot of new equipment in order to comply with the new pollution control regulations. And it was our view that because they were doing that at government direction, that it was not appropriate to ask them to pay property tax on that new investment going forward, because it was not a voluntary investment. So that was the purpose of this bill, was to say that if you have to use, buy, install, et cetera, as the Constitution said, use, construct, acquire, or install wholly or partly, taxable property in order to comply with the new pollution control regulations, we weren't going to tax you on it. The state would not allow local governments to levy a property tax on that property. That was it. That was the purpose. To implement that program, the essential part of the bill was that the eligibility decision as to whether you were wholly or partly using it in order to comply was to be made separate from the valuation decision for property tax purposes. And that's why the commission was given the job of making the eligibility and the use determination. The valuation of the property was left, obviously, with the appraisal district. But there was a very strict line between those two functions. Now, in terms of use determinations, if you will read the Constitution and the implementing legislation, what you see is language that says if there is a mixed use, you determine how much is used for pollution control on the basis of the use of the property. Nowhere in any of that language will you find the words revenue, income, profit, loss. It was to be made on a scientific use determination. What you spent for the property, what you didn't spend, whether you made money with it, whether you didn't make money with it, made absolutely no difference. The only thing that mattered is what you were using it for. And the commission was given the job to do that. We trucked along there for a while until we came to 2001. And I suspect with Mr. Beaver's learned counsel, Representative Ritter, who represents Jefferson County, introduced a bill to, what's the right word, tighten up or make more specific the job of the commission. So a bill was introduced, and what that bill did was, the bill as it was passed read, the commission may adopt rules. What this bill did was say, the commission shall adopt rules, and when the commission does adopt rules, they must include the anticipated environmental benefits, the purpose of the installation, and the estimated cost of the facility. Now, those of you who are familiar with the Code Construction Act know the words must are not exclusionary. It just meant that that had to be a part, those three items had to be a part of the rules. Well, after that bill was passed, the commission set about adopting a set of rules to comply with that. And they created a work group of interested parties, industry, as well as local governments and the appraisal community, to work on the rules. The hardest part of that, as you might imagine, was the job of finding a way to devise a methodology to split the baby when you had mixed-use property. And much as this committee did when you tried to do that here in the past, it was unsuccessful. Nobody in the room could agree upon one formula that would be for everybody. And that was the goal at the time. Although, and I will speak to this later, we emphasized that the rule doesn't require one formula. The statute does not require one formula. Nonetheless, that was the deal. As a fallback position, the committee, the majority of the advisory committee with the commission, decided to go with data that they had available. And that was what resulted in the cap. that was put in the rule, the cost analysis procedure, because we had cost data, and you could make a formula and everybody could use the cost data. But the cost had absolutely nothing to do with the use, which was the commission's job, was determine use. Cost did not matter one way or another in the bill. Nonetheless, that's what happened. I will emphasize as well that when we got the original bill filed by Chairman Stiles, we filed what's commonly known as a placeholder bill that we were going to work on with interest groups going forward. And in the placeholder bill, the language said you had to primarily use the property for pollution control. When we worked with interest groups and the committee, and particularly our members who said, wait a minute, that language is not really going to work for us, because suppose it's 49% pollution control. This language means we get nothing. So we went to the legislature, and in the committee substitute that was drafted and in the bill that passed, that was changed to say wholly or partly used, not primarily used. The next step in the iteration of the bill, the major step, came in 2007 when Mr. Nassy and his colleagues in the clean coal industry got Chairman Hardcastle to pass a bill that established the non-exclusive subsection K list in the bill. The next iteration came in 2009. My friend Don Lee is not here, but the Association of Counties, along with other local government entities, had become concerned because of the implementation of K, particularly as it related to HRSGs, after the bill was passed, because the agency had varying degrees of use determinations for HRSGs. Some of them were getting 100% because they were accepting the methodology that the taxpayer had given them. Others were not, and that became a political issue. The Legislative Budget Board, in their performance review, noted this and said, that ain't right, the commission needs to do something about it. Well, as a result of that, the local governments had Representative Edwards introduce a bill to try and address the issue. When the bill was introduced, we had major problems with a lot of the provisions, not to your surprise, one of which was to say that if the taxpayer submits a methodology and the commission uses a methodology, the commission must adopt whichever results in the smallest pollution control percentage. No, the bill was never meant, and there had never been an attempt to restrict accessibility to the exemption based upon whatever scientific analysis. So we objected to that, and that was taken out of the bill. What resulted in the bill, in addition to the creation of this committee, was an addition of language in G1 that says, and I want to get this completely right, so let me read it, the standards and methods for making a determination under this section as to use are established in the rules adopted by the commission and apply uniformly. So whatever the rules say, whatever standards and directives there are in the rule have to be applied uniformly. There doesn't have to be one formula for everybody. The rules just have to spell it out, what it is, and it has to be applied to everybody that applies for a similar property, like it is in the tax code, where the Constitution says taxes have to be equal and uniform. Well, they do, but the courts have said that doesn't mean that the legislature can't make reasonable classifications based upon a state interest, and as long as they're not capricious or unreasonable, the Supreme Court says they have the ability to do that. So much like that, that's here. You must follow the rules, but the rules don't have to have one formula for everybody. And I'm admittedly a total layman when it comes to the control of pollution science. But if you look only, and remember I told you the work group almost 20 years ago couldn't come up with a formula, and we didn't have the K list. But now we've got the K list. So I don't know how in the world you folks and the folks at the commission can come up with one formula that addresses use, which is the factor that's supposed to be divided here, use, that is exactly the same for bubbling fluidized bed combustion systems, biomass coal firing storage, air jigging, chemical looping, fuel cells, and coal cleaning or drying. I submit to you, if you got one formula that fits appropriately the division of use for all of those different types of equipment, that's pretty miraculous in our view. Therefore, what we want to stress to the committee and the commission going forward in your charge from the commission to develop a way going forward to address in particular the HRSG issue is to concentrate not on the dollars, because the statute has nothing to do with the dollars. And the commission's job has nothing to do with the dollars. It has to do with use, determining a methodology for splitting the use of the property. That's what we would stress you need to concentrate on as you consider how to advise the commission going forward. And with that, that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, John. Appreciate your perspective very much. Before you leave the podium, any questions from anyone on the committee? All right, you'll have an opportunity later on if you want.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Okay, we will. I was asked to get to someone on the TCEQ because I don't think he's going to be here. He can't stay here the entire meeting, so. We'd like an overview of what TCEQ sent to us yesterday.
Okay, good morning. My name is Vincent Myler. I work in the Air Quality Division, for those of you that don't know me, and I'm just going to give you an overview of the approach that we went about in gathering the information for you. Other staff actually did a lot of the research, Javier and Graham, so, but I do have a meeting at 10 o'clock I need to be at. So. Just to give you, like I said, a high-level over, the way we started was we actually pulled Department of Energy, Energy Information Administration data on the begin of operation dates for simple cycle and natural gas combined cycle facilities. And we try to do it in a manner that we're picking entirely new sites, not existing sites that had new units installed, as best as we could to try to do that. And then from there, we narrowed down, okay, where are these sites in Texas, without telling you who or what specific county, but are they in attainment status or non-attainment status, because that can affect permitting. So we broke it into two tables, and we've got the simple cycle on one and the natural gas combined cycle on the other. And when we did this, keep in mind, like I said, we're looking at start of operation in 2009. They would have gotten their permit authorization before that. So some of them may actually be permits that were issued a little bit before then, because they get their permit before they start construction.
Would you repeat that again?
Sorry. When was the beginning of the construction, did you say?
The beginning of – this is based off of when they reported to the Energy Information Administration when they started operation, which we went based on 2009. They would have begun construction before that, and before that they would have got their permit. So Okay. They may have gotten their permit a couple of years before 2009. It doesn't take a terribly long time to build one of these facilities.
Okay.
But they would have to get, I mean, the permits could have been 2007 timeframe.
All right.
But
I'll
this try. Was the easiest way for us to identify startup dates.
And just to make sure we're all real clear, that first comment that you made, which is a great clarification, you guys were trying to bracket the view at truly new construction in either configuration, not repowers, right? You were trying to avoid situations where you already had something and then they were repowering to combine cycle. Is that fair?
Correct. I mean, well, I'll admit it was for our benefit. When you're trying to find a permit, it's easier to find the information on a new permit for a new site than to find an amendment to an existing permit for that particular part. That's the reason.
There wasn't any other motive than to be efficient, right?
Well, I get honestly, it. Yes. It was to make it easier to find the permits.
Yeah, sure. Great. Thanks.
But also in doing this, we wanted to make sure that when you're starting to compare these sites, there is some information you're going to need to know. There's information on what we've identified as the NOx controls on the site, because that's going to tell you, okay, what not just the limit, but what technology is at that particular site. We thought that might be relevant information for you to consider. We went ahead and put on the federal applicability standards as best as we can determine, which is all of these should be subject to NSPS Quad K because of the applicability date in that regulation. It's 2005. And since all of these started up after that date, they would have definitely been constructed they should have been constructed after that date. So they should be subject to that one and not the older regulation, which is subpart GG. But we went and put that information on there as well. Now, one other point I'm sure you notice, especially on the simple cycle site or list of sites, some of those are in PPM at 15% oxygen. Some are in pound per megawatt hour. What we have put in here are the actual permit limitations. We haven't tried to convert anything for you. We would have to make some assumptions about that, and we weren't comfortable with doing that because you're going to have to make assumptions about the heat rate of the facility, and in that particular circumstance, what would permit do? What would the applicant represent? And we felt it was best if we just give you the limits as they are in the permit. So some of their PPM and some are in pound per megawatt hour. On the simple cycle, the ones that are in pound per megawatt hour, they come from the standard permit for EGUs. There's different types of authorization. You can have an NSR permit. For smaller facilities, you can have what we know as a permit by rule. But for these, they either have an NSR permit, a site-specific permit, or they're authorized under the standard permit for EGUs. All of the NOx limits in the standard permit are all in pound per megawatt hour. The permit ones that we get an NSR permit are in PPM, and it's customary to do for turbines to report it in PPM at 15% oxygen. And that's similar to or the same as what's in the subpart Quad K. Quad K gives it in both PPM and in output based. And they actually, it's PPM and in nanograms per joule, I think. We just left the nanograms per joule out and just 1 pounds per megawatt hour. So, and then we have the max allowed emissions and turbine capacity and, you know, the MMBTU per hour capacity as we can identify. And again, we didn't put the name of the facility, and I believe these are the startup years on here. Okay. So hopefully this will give you enough information to work with. A couple other points on the combined cycle, and we found this in a couple of cases. Some of these facilities have special conditions in their permit where they have two different modes of operation where they may run in simple cycle mode for an extended period of time or in combined cycle mode. So we've tried to give you as much information on that because in some cases they could be on both tables, but they run in different modes and they have different permit conditions depending on that mode of operation. Okay. And also the other document we gave you, which is a brief summary, or it's basically the information provided. It's air permits BACT. There's the current one based on the most recent table. We also provided, which is basically an exact copy of air permits, 10-year-old BACT, the historical BACT, which is available on their website. The reason for that is some of these, as I said, are recent startups, and some of them are older startups. The BACT that they're compared to when they're getting their permit, which is not necessarily a set standard, they can come in under special conditions, might get a different standard, but some of these were done under older BACT, and some of them were done under newer BACT. So that's why. The current BACT, I think the current version on the website is dated 2018. I think the difference in stringency that you see between the two, particularly between the 2006 and 2018, I believe that occurred in 2012. We might have to double check with permits on that, but I think that's when the switchover from the older, the 2006 BACT occurred. But like I said, some of these would have been under older BACT, and some of them would have been under the newer BACT requirements. Sure.
Two quick questions. On this back chart, you've got, you know, the most recent 2018, I guess, to now. You've got the 96 to 99 table. You've got the 2000 to 2006 table. What about 2006 to 2018?
That,
which is where most of these plants would have been built in that period in between. Can I just assume that the 2000, 2006 is applicable to through 2018, or was there some more stringent version after 2006?
Actually, I believe it's the 2012 date, and we may not have that on here. Is what's under 2018 is current, but the standards that were in place, I believe that's 2012. We'll double check on that, is when that occurred. The difference between the 2006 and what you see here on the current actually occurred in 2012. But we'll double check, and then we will get back to you. Because I think it's, if you look at the standards that were done, for some of them, they're going to match up with the current BACT, even though they're before 18. But I'm pretty sure that happened in 2012.
If you could
but
get that clarified, that'd be helpful.
Yeah, we'll confirm with permits and
then
get back to you.
A second question I have, and then I'll shut up, is on the natural gas-fired combustion turbines. If I go to the column that says max NOx emissions allowed by permit, which would be, I guess, your yearly, you can't go above that yearly amount of NOx. And it says CT1 plus Herzig, 73 tons per year, CT2 plus 73, also 73. So to figure out what the amount of megawatts that were actually, or the capacity, would I add CT1 plus the steam unit, and that would give me the total capacity, or would I just be looking at the CT unit?
The total capacity for the facility is all three of those combined, CT1
and
CT2.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, in terms of the total per year, I'm looking at the plant A just to take one plant. Mm-hmm. Should, when it says plus Herzig, does that automatically bring in the steam unit?
Well, steam unit won't
run without
steam.
The
unit doesn't have any emissions. The Herzig is providing the steam to the.
What I'm trying to get, I don't know if you follow my logic. I'm trying to say, okay, a simple cycle plant at 179 megawatts, 180 megawatts, has a total per year of 73 megawatts. This is on the other
B column. Plant,
right? So how do I then compare that to the combined cycle in terms of their total capacity versus the total per year NOx?
I was going to do is I was just going to add the two together, the 73.5 and the 73.5, because you got a 2-on-1 cycle here.
But you would add all three units in terms of the capacity.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So is that correct?
Yeah, the emission limits include the heat recovery steam generator. So, yeah, the total emissions allowed are those two going to be combined. The total capacity will include the steam turbine.
Okay.
I got it. Into one here.
I'm just trying to get to some simple comparisons so it can.
I had the same question because I had it on the simple cycle when I looked at this. Like in Plant C, you've got a state limit of 2.5 ppm.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a backed one at 5 to 9 for simple cycle, and then so I would assume that is better than than what is required, you're under that. But then again, you go down to Plant E and you have a 15 ppm limit, which is over.
Well, one, keep in mind, BACT is not a rule. Okay, the applicant can come in and make a case that for that particular circumstance, they need a different standard. Okay, so the BACT is not, it's not like a federal limit or a Chapter 117 limit that says you must meet this standard. It is a starting point for the permit application process. Again, on some of these, though, the although that one in that case, it was after that, I do believe for some of these, if they were after 2012, that they were probably under the newer BACT. But again, I think we need to, let us confirm that with their permits on some of that. But keep in mind, again, it's not an automatic set that they have to meet that number when they do the permitting process.
That's the, just so everybody understands, that's what the Tier 1 means. It's a Tier 1 back table, right? So there are other tiers of a backed analysis that can be more site-specific.
In a general, but yeah, we'd have to have someone from Air Permits to really explain the backed and the permitting process to you.
Right.
But
right.
It's, like I said, it's not just because it's on the back table, even under the newer one, if they come in now, that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to get the 2.0 ppm at 15%.
As a general comment, going back to what the first speaker was talking about use, you can build a simple cycle system and put environmental controls on it without sticking a HRSG on the back end, correct? You can build a simple cycle and meet all the environmental permits through scrubbers or whatever else you do, correct?
Yes. People can build. I mean, we don't tell people what.
If you put a HRSG on the back, that's a combined cycle.
Yeah. I understand, but that's what I'm getting at. You can do a simple cycle and meet all the environmental requirements without having to have a HRSG. You put a HRSG on the back of a simple cycle because you want more capacity, more production. The use of it is to make more production. It's not from an environmental standpoint to clean up the simple cycle. The simple cycle you can do without a HRSG.
There's different limits between a simple cycle and a combined cycle.
For permitting purposes, as far as the way we read the current BACT table, the NOx limit is the same on the ppm basis. Again, it's just a BACT tier, and the applicant may have a different one. If you actually pull up the spreadsheet, we didn't give you all of it. If you actually pull up the spreadsheet for the BACT for turbines, where it differs for combined cycle versus simple cycle is actually in the VOC limit, which we didn't necessarily feel was relevant here. But as far as NOx on the BAC table, they are treated equally. They will be subject to the same BACT review. An applicant may come in and make a case for a different standard. But the BACT is the same whether they're – our starting place is the same whether they're simple cycle or combined cycle.
Right. But my point, getting back again to the use, from a use standpoint, if you have a simple cycle – there's ways to meet your environmental permit without changing it to a combined cycle and putting a HRSG on there. A simple cycle, you can put a scrubber, SCR, whatever, and still meet your permitting limits. I mean, that's what you're showing here on the simple cycle analysis.
We're saying that, the at least on the BACT limit, the NOx limit at the starting point for a BACT analysis is the same one way or the other.
Right,
for NOx.
Right. So I guess my point is you put a HRSG on not for environmental reasons, not for the use of cleaning up the environment. You put it on because it's more efficient. You make more production. It's not an environmental issue. You do get some environmental benefits. Don't get me wrong. You do. There are some environmental benefits to it, but that's not why you put a HRSG on.
What are those environmental benefits?
Well, I'll just jump in and say, I think we know two things. I think the Supreme Court told us we're not supposed to actually look beyond what the statute says in terms of the purpose of that equipment. I think the purpose of that equipment has been established by statute, and the Supreme Court has said as much. The charge of this committee is to evaluate how to actually assess the positive use determination methodology for that. I have contended from the day we started this committee that this kind of intent requirement that you guys keep reading in to this statute doesn't exist in the Supreme. You know, it has pollution control benefits. What we're trying to do is look at real-world data and regulatory, you know, processing of these applications to discern how much of that benefit is achieved. And I think it's a very constructive process to do it, but first of all, I don't think it's fair to ask Vince what the intent of an applicant is, frankly, because that's not the TCEQ's job. TCEQ is assessing how these regulatory requirements can be applied to units as they come to them. Okay, the TCEQ doesn't say you need to put on a HRSG or you need to put on an SCR. They look at the regs that they've been handed, in this case a federal regulation also that's quite telling, we'll get to that, and they just evaluate what will be an acceptable configuration from an environmental control perspective. I'm not going to try to intercept the dialogue. I just think what we really need to do is find out how much of an environmental benefit comes from this equipment. That's really what I think we're trying to study here.
Well, if I may, I can't comment on that. The commission is in the process of looking at that issue, and we're looking to you as well as for guidance on that. We're going to have to come to a decision on the amount of basically how this is going to be applied for this program in light of the court decision, what the statutes require and what our rules require, and the advice of this committee. So that's not something I can weigh in on here.
We appreciate that position and understand where we will try, and I know we all have different perspectives, but we'll try to use you as a resource in TCEQ to try to. We're grappling with this, obviously. So
I understand.
So we're looking for resources.
But Bob, now they've asked us to look at future construction. We're not involved in
correct
what's going on in the past, and that's what I'm trying to get at is the future HRSGs that the newer ones that are being built have equipment put on them like SCRs and things that do create some environmental benefit. And I think that's what needs to be recognized. If you didn't have those scrubbers and other environmental assets added to a HRSG, just putting a HRSG on has minimal effect. There are some efficiencies. You do use less fuel overall, and there is some minor benefit there. But the biggest part of the benefit with the HRSG from an environmental perspective is when they add the SCRs and the scrubbers and things like that that do additional cleanup.
I would just say that really depends on which pollutant you care more about. I would bet that Cyrus cares more about or just as much about that CO2 as the NOx, okay? And the efficiency improvement is a huge factor in terms of producing the same amount of electricity with almost half the fuel. That's a big deal, and that's one of the fundamental things that, frankly, the statute back in 2009 was trying to get to. It was dealing with this new era of environmental regulation that we have, which is going to be a consistent theme that the commission is going to have to grapple with, where the best way to improve performance for some pollutants, like CO2, will be efficiency. And that's a really important consideration when you're evaluating what a HRSG does. I certainly wouldn't suggest that that's the only benefit. There are other benefits. The fact that we add additional pollution control devices like SCRs or polishing scrubbers or other things that we do doesn't change the fact that the HRSG delivers an environmental benefit.
So can I ask a question, Mr. Chairman?
Sure. This is open discussion.
Okay. Mike, I don't think you said earlier, I guess I'm starting with a statement preface my question here, because I want to lay a predicate for why I'm asking this question. I don't think you said that the Supreme Court said, without doubt, the facts are that it's environmental benefit. They said that you can't, that the TCEQ can't use the process of denying, but the TCEQ has an option to say there's no environmental benefit. And that is to go through the process of making the finding the statute requires and taking it off the list. And that was an option available to TCEQ. And they didn't make any factual analysis on whether that would be right or not.
Right. They observed that the legislature had done that. They observed that the legislature had made a determination that this was pollution control equipment. And if the TCEQ, but they had reserved the right for the TCEQ, totally agree with the rest of your statement, to change, to override that statutory determination, but with compelling evidence that there was no environmental benefit to the installation. A threshold I will submit, I don't think we will ever be able to satisfy, because this equipment delivers environmental benefits, period, full stop. Okay?
Well,
you can try to argue that, oh, well, they didn't put it in for that reason. The point is, the statute designates it as such, and the agency is going to have to come up with a compelling evidence-based demonstration. There is no environmental benefit. That's the test. And all the Supreme Court did is say, those are the rules. So unless you plan on doing that, going through a rulemaking that says that HERS deliver no environmental benefit, you've got to give a positive use determination to these facilities. That's what that court clearly said.
Unless you do that. Unless you do determine right. There's no environmental benefit.
Going through the process right. That the statute provides.
Which means the way to do that, obviously, would have to be to find an environmental benefit.
No. I think the burden is clear. The agency would have to have compelling evidence that there is no environmental benefit to override what the court clearly designated as a statutory determination that this is pollution control equipment.
So you're saying that there has to be a proof of a negative?
Absolutely. That's exactly what the statute says, and it's what the Supreme Court echoed in the opinion. And that's why the Supreme Court found it untenable that there could be a negative use determination for this equipment in the face of that statutory direction.
If we were to sit around here and not be able to identify an environmental benefit at all, that the proof is that no one can state an environmental benefit, you'd still say there is one existed.
The statute establishes that this equipment is pollution control equipment. I think your hypothetical's a red herring, because I don't think anybody who knows anything about environmental science would tell you that a HRSG doesn't deliver environmental benefits. I'm sorry.
And I've always assumed that's right. I think from word go, I've said, wait, it can't be 100% exempt. It's got to have some productive purpose, right? I've always assumed that it's not zero. I don't make the case now that I think it is zero. But I'd like to hear someone tell me what it is.
Sure. And I think the factual information that they've delivered here and then some additional discussion we can have, I think does that. I think, you know, getting into, you know, what the agency thinks about why a person might bring one configuration or not isn't really constructive. I think we should look at the data and understand that we may disagree about how much that benefit is, but there's benefit here. I mean, the fact that the federal environmental regulatory standards clearly differentiate, the fact that the BAC standards evaluate these, and frankly, when you look at plants that actually have both simple and combined cycle configurations in them, like plants B and D, right there, side by side, you see a improvement in NOx performance. And so we can get into the details of that.
I hesitate pausing the healthy discussion, but we'd like to get back to that. But can we focus our time with him, since he only has a few minutes? Yeah. Is there anything else on the actual documents that we need to get him to explain?
Do you have any questions more about how we went about Javier and Graham? I mean, we're trying not to identify specifics, but they're the ones that actually dug into the permits information. But, yeah, I've got a briefing at 10 o'clock. I have to be out.
Can I get additional, heat rates for these plants?
That we would have to dig into the permit technical reviews to see. And I don't know if they were able to identify those.
Okay.
And what they have found. They may have found some.
Say that again.
They might be in the permit files, but not necessarily in the tech reviews that we read.
It might be in the permit file, but that's, it's either there or it's not there. And so we'd have to go digging for it, but there's no guarantee that the number even exists in the permit file.
Okay, because I was assuming that.
I'm sorry, would you mind stating your name?
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Javier Galvin. I'm also part of the air quality planning section staff. Sorry.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Yeah, because what I was, you know, I'm assuming some of these limits were set by the design run rates.
Yeah, you could, and this is the issue we ran into, is you could assume it based off of the megawatt capacities and the reported design firing rates, but you're making an assumption.
Right.
And so that as to what the actual heat rate represented, but that's not something that would necessarily be in a tech review that we're looking at. So that may be a little hard for us to dig up.
Okay. Well, that's... Yeah, I was trying not to back into anything. I was trying to see if I could get heat rates or their capacity, rated capacity factor, what they said would set these limits. Then that would help provide at least trying to get an apples-to-apples comparison between the simple on the data.
Capacity factor, I don't know if would be in a permit application. The heat rate might, but we would have to may have to all go all the way to the permit application, which that would be... I think hard for us to do.
Okay. All right. Thought I'd ask. Thank you.
Any other questions for Vince? All right. Thank you very much. And it's good to know others are available. Thank you. All right. We can get back to our discussion where we were, what... And by the way, this is probably a good time to pause for those on the phone. And I know it's hard to jump into a conversation sometimes when you're on the phone. So anyone on the phone have any comments? I'm surprised.
So I was in the process of asking for, and I think Mike's the guy who wants to do this, someone to... just lay out, kind of in layman's terms, what the environmental benefit of HRSGs are. I've always assumed there's one, but I'm not an expert on it at all. In fact, as more information has been provided in this process, I've learned things that have kind of gone, really? And I've thought, well, that's completely different than I thought. So my assumptions on it have been wrong. So I kind of would like for someone to make the, you know, the explanation of what are the environmental benefits of HRSGs.
Chairman, is it out of order for
those
in the audience to comment while you're discussing?
No, absolutely not. Come forward. That's fine.
I'm with you, Don. You guys all know what all the numbers are and dig into them and know what they mean, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know what all that means.
I don't either.
But I do know this, at least it occurs to me, Don. If I'm going to make X megawatts of power, the only way to do that is to burn a fuel that causes pollution, right? Okay. In a simple cycle, I burn X amount of fuel.
The renewable folks would say they've got ways.
Well, I understand, but I'm talking about in a HRSG situation.
Okay.
In a simple cycle, I'm burning X amount of fuel and I'm producing Y power. I put a HRSG and a combined cycle on it. To produce the same amount of power, it requires less fuel. Less fuel, less pollutants.
Or for the same fuel, more power.
Or for the same fuel, more power. Either way you go it, you're reducing the amount of pollutants to produce X amount of power. And to me, it's that simple. I don't want you to say, look, we have to use this amount of stuff that causes pollution, that's regulated, to produce this. If we do this, we can use less amount of polluting stuff and produce the same amount of product. I don't know why that's not an environmental benefit.
Mm-hmm. So your view would be, and don't I'm asking this as a question.
Sure.
I'm not trying to put any words in your mouth.
No problem.
That any improvement in productive efficiency therefore producing more widgets per pollution amount. Is any equipment that does that, any equipment that is more productively efficient, is a pollution control device?
Absolutely. That's why the statute says process. It says equipment, it says processes. So if you have a more efficient process, the statute says that qualifies.
And in this case, EPA and Quad K, consistent with the very theme that John just explained, regulates NOx on an output basis, on a pound per megawatt hour, not a heat input, not if I just look at this spot on the turbine and what's it emitting, on an output basis because of that fundamental principle. And that's even before we start talking about CO2.
And, you know, that's why we got put in the statute the word process, for exactly that reason. Because we had our members say, well, suppose we make improvements to the way we route this or do whatever, and that reduces pollution. If we have to buy stuff that goes on the property tax roll in order to accomplish that more efficient process, will we qualify? The answer is yes. That's why the statute says process.
So a double-decker truck that carries more widgets for amount of fuel burned and amount of emissions is pollution control.
Well, no, it's not, because vehicles are prohibited in the statute.
Okay.
The statute says vehicles can't qualify.
A bigger dry cleaning, a bigger dry cleaning equipment.
Okay.
That emits less regulated stuff that dry cleaners emit, whatever that is, for amount of shirts washed, is pollution control equipment?
In part, yes. Wholly or partly, to meet or exceed. And it does, in fact, partly produce an environmental pollution control benefit. Yes.
And so under our current rules, you would analyze, well, what would the prior size of equipment and efficiency of equipment cost?
Yes.
And compare that to the bigger, more efficient,
right, which I've said in my
dry cleaning equipment
introductory comments, has no business in this decision whatsoever. Find me the word cost in the statute. It's not there.
But it's cost in the current rule, right?
I mean, it is in the rule. That is correct. But
you and
the rule,
I served on the advisory committee that put that in place.
And I explained how that came about. And the charge to this group, as I understand it, in the letter, as Mr. Attaway said, is to devise a solution going forward. That means you don't have to stick with the same rule. You can recommend the rule be changed. And in our view, the rule needs to be changed. It does not need to have one methodology that applies to every single type of equipment. In order to meet the charge that you must be equal and uniform in application of the rules, that's not required anywhere in the statute. So you could have different methodologies for different types of equipment and apply it equally and uniformly anytime anybody submits a HRSA. You go to this formula. If you submit an air jigger, you go to this formula. If the commission and this advisory committee decides that's appropriate. In this case, I think it is most appropriate that you develop a use-based process for determining the use of HRSAs, period. And there is an environmental benefit. First of all, as Mike said, the statute says so. And that's what the Supreme Court said. In effect, the court said, for all practical purposes, you know that cap formula you got? That doesn't work. You applied the cap here and you got a negative determination. You can't do that. The statute says this is at least partly pollution control.
and you have to determine what part. You can't apply some formula that gets a negative. That's what the court said.
The court also said if you think there's no, if it's a zero,
absolutely,
then you have to go through a process.
Now,
absolutely. Mike would make that as a process that can never be obtained. It's actually a non-existent
well,
process.
I don't know that that's the case.
I'm not sure I assume that. I'm not sure
suppose
I assume
suppose this
that.
Committee decided that's the recommendation they want to make to the commission.
I assume that if all you can point to as an environmental benefit is the legislature said so, that that's the only evidence that you have, that I'm not sure you have. I think you have compelling evidence that there isn't one.
Okay. Well, I disagree with the last statement.
If all you have is you don't have any evidence of environmental benefit, so I'm asking for someone to lay that out. And what I think I'm hearing you say is it's more efficient.
The legislature made that decision, Don.
I understand.
And you may not agree with the legislature, and you say they had no basis for doing it, but the legislature said this is pollution control equipment.
No, I tried not to put any words in your mouth. Don't put words in my mouth.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Because I didn't say that. I said if no one can provide evidence beyond that the legislature said, then I start to say maybe there isn't one right there. And so someone has to lay out what that environmental evidence is. You're telling me, and it's one I really need to think about, I think we all need to think about, is that any productive efficiency is environmental benefit.
Absolutely. If you produce less pollutants in order to make the same amount of stuff, that's an environmental benefit, and that's why the word process, I keep repeating myself, is in the statute. To say if you develop a process that does that, it's pollution control.
But I don't think we're necessarily obligated at this time to carry that forward to all tier three.
No.
Yeah, and that's a really important point, because I would agree with the sentiment that even though you could discern an environmental benefit from any process improvement, I wouldn't necessarily go there for everything, because as an environmental lawyer, I think the process itself actually has to emit a pollutant we know exposes humans to risk, right? So there's a subset. The good news here is we got one job, just one.
Yeah.
Does emissions from a power plant based on these two types of configuration get improved on an output basis? That is the environmental benefit. The EPA regulates on an output basis, and it regulates NOx as a precursor of ozone for that reason. The EPA also has determined that it's going to regulate CO2 as a pollutant, and moving forward, well, that there will be a CO2.
Have you looked at any of the recent rule proposals? I would argue they're not, but whatever.
Well, hey, yep. The endangerment fine is in place.
Yeah.
The 111 determination for power plants is narrowing its view on regulation to coal plants initially, but the basis for jurisdictional assertion is there. I mean, we wouldn't argue about that.
It seems that's the biggest thing to me is that the regulatory structure for these plants is on a per megawatt basis, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Quad K is an output-based NOx limit. So that makes this a little easier, Don. I'm not saying it makes it you feel better. I'm just saying it's a subset, and that's not going to be true for a lot of things, it's not going to be true. Output-based emission limits are actually kind of rare. They should be more prevalent, frankly.
So I want to get us to actually talking about this. I think there are three things we can look at, right? I think there's the PPM... PPMV, what's the full name?
Yep. You can go PPM.
PPM, there's the
volume
PPM.
Drive.
Yeah, volume. There's the pounds per megawatt hour is another thing we can look at. And then there's total yearly tons. And so, it's really hard to look at this and scratch numbers and figure it out without really delving into details. But when I just eyeball it, the PPMV to me looks to be about 40, and these are just without, this is just sort of a first draft, about 40% less on a combined cycle than a I see about a 40% drop, like from 9 to 5 or 25 to 15, if you look at these charts.
Or you could look at 2 to 9. So it's probably somewhere in between.
Well, two to, you know, that seems pretty, yeah.
Well, I mean, I get what you're saying. Yeah. If you're trying to keep the number small,
right,
you look at 5 to 9. But if you're trying to look at the, I mean, it's, they're the bottom end and the top end of these, that's the hard part about our job, is there's a range.
There's a range. But then if I look at total yearly output, tons per year, you know, and these, again, are rough. In a combined cycle, it's almost like for every megawatt of power, you're getting about a fourth of a ton per year. And in the single cycle, it's more like 2 to 1. For, and again, I haven't looked at all the numbers, but just roughly. So that means, you know, 25% of your output goes into tons, or 50%. So it's like a 25% discount. So I think that's the range, somewhere between 25 to 40 is kind of the range in output. I could be wrong because I haven't looked at all the numbers. The pounds per megawatt hour is harder to look at because some permits have it and some don't. I am confused why, when you use, like in Plant B, why do you have a higher pounds per megawatt hour when you're running the HRSG than when you just run something as a
you can't run the you, it, well you can't run the HRSG without the combustion turbine, so that's if you're running the HRSG alone, and if you run the HRSG alone, you're just a direct fired boiler.
Oh, okay, so it's not with a direct fire. So we should ignore that one.
Okay, it's like basically saying, okay, here's a boiler.
Yeah, that's what was confusing me.
Okay. Really shouldn't even call it a HRSG.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. That makes sense. It's not roof. It's not roof. But yeah, I mean, if I look at that KKKKKKK. Well, I got to be careful
let's
just,
here. Let's stay with 4Ks for now.
Definitely stay with 4Ks. You know, a lot of it is the difference between 15 and 25 or 9 and 5. You know, it's sort of in that 40% range. So, you know, I'm not making a recommendation because I feel like we need to look at these numbers more carefully. But I'm just saying that seems to me, the 25 to 40% range seems to me, in terms of output, what the range is.
And again, I have no interest in HRSGs, but it seems that that's on a lower range, because it does go, comparing 2 to 9, you got more of a spread there.
Yeah, but do we even see any of that 2 to 9 in these tables for the years in which they're built?
Well, yeah, I mean, let's look at Plant D.
Plant B
and D, if you look at their simple cycle configuration. Simple cycle configuration versus combined cycle. Those are good examples because they actually permitted both scenario. And they permitted 1 at 2 and 1 at 9. Simple as 9.
Okay, sorry. Tell me again where you're looking.
So, yeah, Plant B on the combined cycle table.
Okay.
So you can run in both configurations, and you can look at the max allowable emissions output. I guess the 196 is your HRSG and CT output. Yeah. So you see the state permit limit?
Yeah, I see.
2 to 9, and then there's your range.
So I'm trying to look ahead at all the way to close to Thanksgiving. We hopefully have a goal of getting a recommendation. Do we think this is sufficient data? Not that I want to inundate TCQ with more requests. But I think that's – today we probably need to determine if we want more data or if we can make a determination or advice on what we have. Any thoughts?
Sorry.
Yeah, my thought is I'm still sitting over here with Don thinking, what's the use of the facility and the intent of the facility? And I agree that HRSGs do provide some environmental benefit. I don't see how you're getting up into that 40% plus range, though. I just don't see that at this point. So
yeah, so I was just looking at the difference in the parts per
million VD volume dry.
And just comparing those and saying it's about a 40% reduction. Or I was looking at tons per year based upon their capacity, you know, what that limit is, and then I get more like a, you know, 15%.
And just so you understand, so we understand what the top end range is, because I do think it's good to talk about these different metrics and how they differ. If the difference is between 2 and 5 ppmvd, okay, that's 60%.
That's 60%.
If the difference is between 2 and 9, it's 78. If you're splitting the baby in the mid-range of the CT allowable backed, it's 2 to 7.5. So those are 60, 70, and 78%. So I do, just to be fair, if we're looking at the metrics, the range is really 25% to 78%.
Right. We don't mistakenly look at the inverse.
Right.
Right, but I think we're comparing apples and oranges here to some extent, because on a simple cycle, you can have equipment that reduces some of the pollution that comes out of it. You can have similar type of equipment on a combined cycle plant, depending on how efficient the particular equipment is you put on there. I think the key is, and the difficult job is, the efficiency that you gain, not the other environmental equipment you put on, because you can put that same equipment on a simple cycle or a combined cycle. It's the efficiency that you gain in the combined cycle. And I think some of the information I gave you all said, you know, there's something like a 40% improvement in efficiency. So how do you get down to just what's the benefit of that versus this additional equipment, which may be skewing it one way or the other?
Can I just say, efficiency is primarily relevant because it relates to pollution reduction.
Correct.
Not cost. Okay, make sure we're not going there. Okay.
No, right. Correct.
That's actually a really good point, and they did include the NOx controls in the column because you wouldn't want to compare a single cycle plant in an attainment area that was built and whatever, didn't need a bunch of controls on it, with a combined cycle in a non-attainment area that had to put, you know, it just wouldn't be a fair comparison. So I think it's a good point that you need to try to make balance.
And I would just note, and again, I don't know that this gives us a magic widget because it doesn't, but remember, these other pollution control technologies have parasitic load, right? They reduce the efficiency and therefore increase emissions on an output basis. Nobody would ever submit that an SCR is not pollution control equipment because it does that, but it is important. If you can achieve emission reduction without impacting the efficiency of the unit negatively, that's a good thing, not just for NOx, Cyrus, as we both know. So that's, you know, these are legitimate questions. There is no magic number. I mean, we get it. Greg and I are over here trying to figure out the right engineering solution for it, and it's not easy. I mean, it's an environmental benefit 100%, honestly. We're not submitting that. That's not what we're arguing.
Okay? That one's not going to fly.
Just like zero is not going to fly. So we're all in that kind of magic ether between 0.1 and 99.9.
And I guess that raises a question, Bob. Is it our goal to come up with some sort of a formula recommendation saying you look at parameters X, Y, and Z for each future plant, and that's, you do some mathematical formula and you get a number? Or is it our goal to say, hey, just use 20% and that's what everybody should get?
That's what I mentioned in our last meeting. You might recall three options. I don't know if I recall three options, but one of them was, do we tweak the cap formula, or do we use try to come up with some compelling evidence to add it to tier one. And I forget what the other one was, but anyway, I think I hear most of our discussion moving toward tier one, because as John said, I don't think we're going to have a revised cap for all property, including Herzig's.
And is it not true that if we were to come up with what we thought was an appropriate percentage of the equipment that could come off the tax rolls because it's leading to less pollution, that doesn't prevent any applicant from saying, I don't think it's 20% or 40% or 60%, whatever we come up with, from going and going to a tier three application and saying, well, in my particular case, you know, my unit is so much more efficient that I believe it should be 80% or whatever. I mean, an applicant can still do that and say, I'm not going to apply for the tier one automatic. Isn't that true?
That's my interpretation. Yeah. Or even tier two, if they want to go 100%, go for it. Yeah. It's not likely you'll get it, but.
Sometimes people go to a tier one, and if the facts don't support a tier one, then the TCQ will send them elsewhere.
Okay, so they have the discretion to say.
They have.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Hi, Charlie.
All right, I will pause and ask again. Anybody on the phone have any input? All right, if you're on mute, we can't hear you. Giving you another option there. Okay. All right. We'll continue.
Rooted in something.
Oh, yeah. We should root it in something.
And some analysis of the use, right? I mean, exactly what John said.
So we have the difficult task of trying to come. And I realize we just got this information yesterday, so that's part of our, and that's no slide on TCQ, and it took them a while to pull it together. But we're going to meet in 3 weeks, and I'm not winding down. That's not my intent here.
Yeah,
I'm saying how can we redirect to make this a?
I mean, what I'd like to do is look at this data here that was submitted, and try to make them comparable, so that we don't have such differences between them, in order to say what is the real difference between them, between a simple cycle and a combined cycle, and see where that leads us at this point. But I think, you know, just, I mean, from the simple side, looking at the state permits, you see 2 to 9, 2 to 9, 2 to 9, and that's in the Back 1 analysis. So if you want to change that from 2 parts per man and put that into a ton basis, then it's just a matter of trying to equalize these so that we know what we're looking at.
So you asked earlier about heat rates. Is that necessarily a negative because we don't have heat rates on all these plants? And Bob, that's a naive question.
Yeah, Bob, as it comes to heat rates, you don't have the heat rates of the specific ones, but I gave you some generic examples of some groups of typically what a heat rate is in certain sizes. That came from Gas Turbine World, so you might be able to use that as a substitute.
Right, and I think that'll show that those efficiencies will tie to those heat rates. I mean, that's how it works.
Okay. Any other ideas? I would like, maybe I'm dreaming here, but I would like, with the time we meet in 3 weeks, for us to crunch some numbers or look at, maybe we can get, I don't know if we get the screen down here, whatever. Get Excel on the screen or whatever to show what we're looking at.
Right. And
this is healthy discussion.
It is great. And the agency, thank you guys, because I know that wasn't easy to pull together. And this comment is not intended to actually create a homework assignment. I'm going to take this one on myself. I welcome their research too. But the comment that Vince made about being able to identify permits easily and not having to dig for amendments to existing permits, that's a really important thing that they did to limit the universe. But repowers are a quite relevant consideration because one option certainly is to look at people who have new permits that have two different configurations that are authorized, right? That's one way. That's what we have here with B&D. Another way is to look at an existing facility that repowered to combined cycle. And look at that facility and see what the NOx benefit was at that facility, right? That I'm not suggesting that should drive our, but it's another way to look at it. Not everybody's a repower, okay? And like Greg was saying, I think Tier 3 can handle some situations where there might be other equipment that gets added at the same time, right? So we're not dealing with that. We're just saying as it relates to Herzig and the potential for listing this Tier 1, you know, what's the right metric? And so we're going to do some pulling of repowers that we're aware of just to, because I don't know the numbers off the top of my head. I'm just admitting to you, but that to me is also a quite relevant consideration to look at.
All Okay.
Not to muddy the water and change the subject just slightly, but a question was recently posed to me. Solar farms don't have any pollution to speak of. Are they 100% exempt, Don?
No.
But,
right. I mean,
any more than hydro treaters.
Well, and a piece of equipment that makes it one piece of equipment that makes something 1% more efficient, not only 1% exempt, it's 100% exempt.
Correct.
Right? If it's pollution control equipment, it's being used for pollution control, it's exempt. We've never looked towards.
What is that? I don't understand the question.
A percentage type efficiency to determine use.
Well, I agree with that, and I've not seen HRSGs put in for pollution control. HRSGs are put in for production reasons. They do have some pollution benefits. I'll be the first to say they do have some, but that's not why you build them.
In an environment where the producers are being regulated on how much pollution per megawatt hour, it seems that it seems to fit into the regulatory scheme mm-hmm. to say that it's a pollution. There's a pollution control use there, but what you're saying is something that makes intuitive sense to me, and I find it very difficult in this situation. Obviously, extremely difficult because.
It is productive.
And the best method that this collection of modules.
Sorry about that. Maybe you had to walk all the way here to tell me that. You have to get a paper airplane from over there. Sorry about that, man. I lost my train of thought there. Speaking of trains.
It'll come back.
It usually does.
So I'll fill in a little bit here. We talked about intent earlier. I think we need to be careful about going toward the intent, but staying with the use. And again, that's a very broad statement because I don't have that HRSG expertise. So to the extent we can, I'd like for us to focus on the data that we have and to come up with some compelling evidence, which I think we have, TCQ has helped us, help provide it for us.
So what's a compelling evidence of? I mean,
I appreciate that, and you've asked a technical question that I'm not quite there yet.
As the permitting standards and the data show that we get more megawatts for less NOx. Period. Full stop. That's and what we need to decide is how much more and where do we feel comfortable. I mean, Greg and I have been looking at all the different ways people proposed in their applications. And what's interesting about that is that all of those different methodologies, they all kind of normalize if you actually plot them on a graph in a range between 40 and 60%, just so you know, every one of them.
And how do they... I mean, how do they basically get there?
Totally different methodologies. I think one of the things that... Go ahead.
There was three basic categories. There was outliers. They had emissions avoidance, which is your tons per year. They had the tier threes, and they had efficiencies.
Right. Efficiency improvement, just straight up. How much more efficient? Plop that number down, right? It's 40% or whatever the number was. And then you had on the other side a NOx avoidance calculation. Right, and then in the middle there were these folks that used surrogate inputs for cap, and calculated what they think the right, you know, CCO and you know once you fix the inputs, you can get cap to work to generate a number that seems in the same range. And frankly, it was smack dab in the middle of those two ranges. So it is, you know, in terms of creating a consistent record of those methods, you know, of how the different methodologies all come out with a different number, it could be that, you know, we don't all kind of, we're not in violent agreement about why we came up with the number, but we at least can say, hey, if you look at it in these different ways, they all drive you to this range. That's what I was saying in the first meeting, is that if that range roughly measures, compares against the pollution control NOx avoidance, then, you know, that you know, from an environmental regulatory perspective, I feel good about that. I don't know how Cyrus would say that, but if they're in the comparison, if all the different methodologies get you in that bracket, then it really depends on, you know, what methodology you like. The great thing about Tier 1 and having a record to support it is we don't necessarily have to agree, because we don't want to create a precedent for, you know, that somehow people could use to say, aha, you did it here, you have to calculate CAP here. Roland's shaking his head, because we're not trying to do that. We don't have an alternative agenda. We're just trying to do the job the commission gave us, Herzog's alone. Let's figure out a way to make it work. And sure, if we could figure out how exactly to make the CAP work, to make it give us the right number, fine. But I actually think that's risky, because it could be used as a precedent argument. And let's just come up with a number that actually mirrors the environmental benefit and feel good that no matter what methodology you use, it's in a certain range. So that's a pretty good record to support a recommendation.
Again, there are alternatives that you can use to meet your environmental guidelines. You don't have to build a HRSG to do that.
Yeah,
HRSGs are built for productive use.
I'm going to continue. I'm in the power business, and I totally disagree with your comment. Okay, I'm an environmental regulatory for power plant operators. I don't know a lot about a lot, but I know a lot about that. Okay, and for you to sit here and tell me what power generators and boards of directors of co-ops and munis and investor-owned utilities do as an intent is a great argument, but it has nothing to do with what we're doing here today. What we can agree on is that there are environmental benefits to this equipment, and we should be able to identify a range of what those benefits look like. The simple fact is that, you know, I can make all kinds of arguments about how it's essential that we have the most efficient power generation necessary, because we need electricity, we need megawatts on the grid. And if what we do is we don't really send a signal to the marketplace that's positive in terms of efficiency, that's not good. But I'm not bringing those arguments.
If you need megawatts on the grid, start shutting down some of the wind power.
We might have agreement on that. But the point is that we've got a job to do. We're just trying to figure out a sound, technically sound, consistent way to support it, right? And Don, you're absolutely right. If none of us could say what the environmental benefit was, then it'd kind of feel like a weird exercise. There's no doubt that there's an environmental benefit. John, he's humble and says he's not an environmental expert, but he identified the essence of what this is all about. If you have to burn less to produce the same amount, that's true of every pollutant. Here we just actually have a pollutant that's regulated on that basis.
That nexus there,
yeah,
is what makes that make some sense to me, is that that's the regulatory structure that the regulatory gods have come up with. Right? You know, just saying things are more efficient, well, you know, for business purposes, we move things more efficient all the time,
mm-hmm.
Right? I don't think that means it's environmental use. But in this case, it seems to me there's a case to be made here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out, though, how we get to a number that is not getting us down this line of that I'm obviously uncomfortable with, which is by just calculating, you know, what's the efficiency improvement? Because that, to me, it's just uncomfortable. But maybe in this case, because that's how we regulate it, it seems, that efficiency of megawatt hours per unit of pollution is the route we have to go. But I really want us to think through what that means.
Did any of the folks who came up with their own formulas look at the actual hourly heat input rates and compare?
From a historical basis, you mean?
Well, so like in these charts that we've been provided, one of the columns is turbine max hourly heat input rate, which I think gets at some of the efficiencies.
That's what that was a question I asked Vince, is if you had the heat rates and you had some drivers, we could.
Okay. Because that would be another way, not looking at the pollution. I mean, it gets to the same issue of efficiency, but you would just look at their heat efficiency as they're burning stuff. So that could be, I said I saw three, and I now see four different things we could look at. I like the pollution avoidance stuff because it's the only thing I can understand. So I'll try to, between now and the 3 weeks, actually chart out that total tons per year output.
And like I'm sensitive, and I'm not putting words in Roland's nod, but like I'm sensitive not creating cap precedent that would be problematic, I'm also sensitive to your what you're concerned. Like, I don't like the idea that we would just throw a number based on efficiency improvement. I get that. And here, when we go back and look at this data, please understand these concentration-based benefits, 2 to 5, 2 to 9, 2 to 7.5, those are not output-based. Those are concentration-based benefits, right? So we do have a unique circumstance here. And, you know, whether it's a hybrid approach or how we calculate it is different, but you hopefully can understand that it's certainly not linear against its efficiency improvement. I made the statement about output-based emission framework just to give you a sense that the God, as an EPA in this setting, has actually decided, you know what, this is how we're going to regulate. That doesn't mean necessarily that's how we should calculate the number.
Good time to pause for people on the phone. Any comments? All right. Anybody from the audience? John.
I'll respond to a couple of things that Mr. Attaway said. First of all, solar.
John, would you reintroduce yourself for the record?
John Kennedy with the Texas Taxpayers Research Association. Don't worry about solar farms. Yeah, we took care of that in the Valero case where the court said, no, dude, it's source pollution. It's not overall environmental benefit. It's reducing the pollution that you're creating, and I don't think solar farms create any. Secondly, we can't conflate the definition of use with intent or purpose. I think you're absolutely correct. The intent or the purpose of putting on HRSGs is to produce more power at less cost. Absolutely. That is the intent and the purpose. But for the purposes of the exemption, that doesn't matter. What matters is what I do with equipment or whatever to produce that intended result. If what I do reduces polluting effects, I get an exemption, because it's the use of the property. When I put it in place and start running the HRSG, yeah, my intent is to produce more power and make more money, absolutely. But the use of the equipment to do that produces a pollution benefit. Use is very, very different from intent or purpose.
Thanks, John.
A closing observation about the world we live in. Combined cycle units don't make more money. In this market, it's absolutely a bloodletting in the marketplace if you have a bigger power plant versus a smaller one. So none of this matters for our discussion today. But just so everybody is not, is encumbered with the reality of the energy market of the United States of America, having more megawatts and being able to produce more baseload power for the grid is not incentivized by our market structure. It is... Your instinct would be build the smallest thing you can do to keep yourself out of trouble when it gets really, really hot or really, really cold. Otherwise, you're going to get bled by the marketplace because there's just not enough income in the actual generation of megawatts in the market.
We're waiting on the ITCs to run out to get the rates up.
Exactly.
That's right.
That is a very good observation.
I'm not going to get into this discussion, so I'll just be quiet. I have a different view of it than you do.
All right. Any other comments? Where are we, and where do we go from here? Any advice?
Well, I'll concentrate on that tons per year and try to come up with some numbers just to share with the group for next time.
Yeah, Cyrus, can you shoot me your four? Now it was three, now four. Can you shoot me your four thought lines?
The four was, one is we look at the parts per million concentration out of the stack. Another would be we look at pounds per megawatt hour, which seems difficult because some of these have one and some don't, so it's a little hard to look at. Third would be to look at the total capacity versus the tons per year emissions allowed. And the fourth would be to look at some sort of heat rate efficiency or heat input efficiency. So those would be the four I'd look at. And then we could have some numbers. We could see some ranges.
And I guess you're going to figure out how to balance what equipment they have on.
I mean, I think it's worth noting, yeah, what equipment they have on. I'm not sure that it – right, because you want to compare – you want to know – right, if the simple cycle has an SCR – and so does the combined cycle, then you can compare them easier than if one doesn't.
Right? Yeah, well, yeah, heat rates won't matter on that respect.
Dante, I'm looking for more homework for TCQ, but do we have sufficient information with what we have?
I mean, the only other thing you could also look at, and I think we decided we don't want to go there, would be actual cost. Like if you're a new developer and you're going to do a simple cycle or a combined cycle, what's the difference in cost versus the output of pollution? And I mean, that would be another thing you could look at.
I passed out some cost information. I assume you got some of that. Now that's just generic information. They came out of Gas Turbine World. It's not something that Pritchard and Abbott produced. It's a publication. So it gives you some references, kind of gets you in the ballpark.
Okay. And I was going to look at empirical repower projects to get empirical data. Here's what you release now versus what you were releasing. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a good, you know, scenario for replacement of coal.
Is that with the meeting at 9 a.m.? It's in the morning, right? The meeting on the
17th. Okay. Anything else?
It's in the morning, right?
17. Any other suggestions from the audience or the phone?
Yeah,
it's 10 o'clock, right? Like, this was the only one at 9.
All right, anybody, any advice from TCEQ? And I realize you're trying to keep your distance from advising us. I understand that, but anything that you would like to comment for us?
So, Bob, what do you think the road ahead is? Do you think the road ahead is development of some of these options they're talking about and running out numbers and everyone looking at them and how our stomachs react?
I'm just one member, but I would say it seems like that step it should be done as part of our process as developing compelling evidence. If we go toward Tier 1, and I don't want to continue pushing that direction, but it seems like we're going that direction.
Out of all the uncomfortable options, the Tier 1 is the least uncomfortable option because of how narrow and limited it is, right?
Yep.
So.
Did anyone else comment on it?
I agree, because that's the job we've been given. Note for those that may get reappointed, so this may not be your problem. This issue's coming in a big way. Output-based emission regulation is upon us. I think Ron Hatless said openly, you know, we're going to have to come up with new tools to deal with the new era of environmental regulation. So, not your problem.
Not my problem.
You can say, you can tell us what you think from the cheap seats, maybe. Or.
I would.
You make a good comment there, and I'll go back to some earlier comments that Mr. Kennedy made. We were in an environment where the curtain kind of came down, and they said, okay, you got to start putting all this equipment on. But that was during that point in time in history. Now everybody knows you've got to clean stuff up. They know you have to put in this stuff up front. So why does it need to be exempted now going forward? You know you got to put it in. You know you got to clean it up. You're not being this is not a mandate for an existing refinery that they say you got to go get all the sulfur out or whatever.
Normal course of business.
Right, it's a normal course of business.
Well, it's the normal course of the evolution of the economy and of society is that things get more efficient and more cleaner, et cetera. And that was always our, that was the discussion. John, I don't want to get John back up to debate the original parts of the bill because what's in law is in law, right? But the
externalities, the benefits to society are realized by all of us versus the operator. To me, as a utility regulatory person, that as a big part of what rate making is about, not in Texas anymore, but the concept that I always thought was a sound policy principle, which continues to be a sound policy principle between this constitutional amendment or for this amendment, and by the way, several other states do the same thing, right, is if the person who's spending the capital isn't getting all the benefit from that capital, we're certainly not going to tax it, not at 100%. That there is a societal benefit, and there can be both. And those both benefits is where we are in some of this analysis.
That's right. And what you just said there is exactly right. And it's why our association supported the constitutional amendment.
So did we.
At the same time, we have to find the balance, right? And I think for the health of the program going forward, we have to make sure we're staying focused on those that property being used. And I don't talk about processes because property is what we tax. We don't tax processes, right? We tax property. That property that is being used for that overall societal benefit. And as society and the economy moves forward, it doesn't become a way to start rolling back business taxes in general.
I enjoy talking tax policy, but also recognize I'm not a legislator. So we are to only advise, I guess, what the commission as a...
Well, this one we have very specific. This one we have very specific and narrow, and narrow charge, and I think you're right. You're absolutely right to keep us focused on staying down that narrow and focused charge. And I'd love to see us find a recommendation to the commission along those lines.
Right.
Question.
Yes.
If you do a tier one, how many different variables could you have? I mean, do you start out with a clean slate and build a Herzig? Do you start out with an existing gas fire that they want to turn into a Herzig? Do they both qualify for the same exemption?
You know, Roland and I thought about the same thing often, that it may end up being smart for us to say repowers and new builds are two different tier one listings, that because the truth is that rebuilds actually have other equipment that is necessary, right? So my kind of gut was going to be we come up with a number for that will be the floor, and that if somebody has a repower where they want to put other equipment in, so we don't overly complicate our lives here, they can file a tier three to see if they can get additional treatment. I'm just trying to be reasonable. I'd be support the idea of actually coming up with a repower number, but I think the repower number will be higher in terms of percentage overall net. But you know, I do think it's something for us to be mindful of, because in terms of answering that fundamental question, what's the benefit? Repower is a good way to actually get an appreciation for that. But in the sense of, if somebody's coming in with a positive use determination application for a repower, how's it going to get dealt with? We should talk about that before we finalize our recommendation for sure. Should we list it separately? Should we say, if you've got that, you can bank on this as a minimum, but you're going to have to file Tier 3 to get it more than that, or you can just default back to the Tier 1 number? Just ideas, but it's a good question.
I realize we all have day jobs, but it would be good if we can have some semblance of recommendations, or at least calculations in the direction, by our next week meeting, or in 3 weeks. I don't know if we can do that, but we only have two meetings scheduled. Not to say we can't have another meeting, but we only have two remaining meetings before we're supposed to provide advice. And ideally, it seems like we would vote on November 8th, where we're going. We're on advice. Does that, well, I wonder if it's doable, but I think we can if we put our
well, I guess the question would
our minds to it.
Maybe I'm wrong, but the question would be, is there anyone here who believes they can come back on their next meeting with what they would propose as a
draft?
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. One or more options.
I appreciate Cyrus giving us some guidance on four. Yeah, yeah.
Well, right. I'll work on the one, because that's the one I'm most interested in.
Wait, can you? And, okay.
Give them all 5% that they want more, they can come back and ask for more. There's a recommendation.
Can you also evaluate during the ramp period when wind falls off the grid and we're flat out on a bunch of CTs, what the NOx emissions are then?
I can provide all that data from ERCOT to you. It's more complicated than your simple narrative makes it.
I think David Schaumbacher actually did a study about that.
Okay, I'm not trying to stretch this out, but I'm also trying to keep a reality check. With time ticking. So, okay. Any other comments from the audience or the phone? Greg was pulling his mic. Any thoughts? Okay. All right, I'm going to go too quickly. Okay. Anybody from the phone? One last chance. All right, I also encourage us to talk in between times. Not a quorum, but among yourselves, get ideas, collaborate, whatever you think is productive in moving us down this path. All right, I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
My motion.
All right, it's been moved and seconded. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, aye. Nay. We are adjourned. Thank you.